Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Behind the Badge, Illinois. It's the end of May already, and we decided to do a grab bag. We've got Chief Brugman down in O'Fallon. We've got Chief Bird up in DeKalb. We got AJ from the ILACP and Chief Jogman in Highland Park, the Behind the Badge, Illinois, sponsored by Team Hochberg. If you're looking to purchase a new home, refinance your existing home, give me a call. We provide substantial discounts to all first responders and their family members, like Lou's daughter right now is in the process of purchasing a home. We are waiving all of our processing fees and save a substantial amount of money. So we are going to do a mailbag. We've been receiving a lot of emails. I'm looking at my phone because we've got a ton of emails from our listeners with questions for the Chiefs regarding different topics, from panhandling to why can't you shoot somebody in the leg and other different types of questions from our listeners. So let's jump right into it, guys and gals. Ready? We'll start with the first one. That's what it was. Why can't police shoot someone in the leg or hand not to kill them in a situation where they have to draw their gun and it escalates to where deadly force is needed? So we'll start from Southern Illinois. We'll work our way up. Kirk, you're up, buddy.
Well, good question. So it's an interesting thing. It's one of the things that I think we train on more than anything else that we're doing. It's the use of deadly force. It's the use of force in making an arrest. It's one of the greatest police powers that we have as police officers, the ability to legally take a life. And it is something as a police chief and a police officer that we are heavily scrutinized on and should be. When we do our training, you know, we look at that and to get really into the nuts and bolts of it, it's like, you know, we have the ability to use deadly force only when reasonably necessary in defense of human life. So without reading the whole statute of that, it's incredibly stressful situations when officers are placed in those deadly force situations, when they have to weigh the option of using deadly force against someone. And essentially what we do is when we're training is we're training to stop that threat. We're not necessarily training to kill someone. We're training to stop that threat. So if there is a threat against somebody's life, against an officer's life, a civilian's life, that officer needs to stop that as soon as possible and save lives. And just shooting a hand or a leg is not the best option there is. You know, hands move. You know, we watch hands all the time because hands can kill, because hands hold weapons. But to actually shoot that gun out of her hand, it's not like the movies. It is an incredibly stressful situation. It involves using fine motor skills, stuff that kind of goes out the window when you are dealing with high stressful situations. So when we train to stop that threat. And the biggest part of the threat is the center mass of the body. To try to stop that threat. You know, people need to understand too, if we're going to pull that gun out and we're going to shoot, the mere fact of using that gun on someone is deadly force. So if I say, well, I was just trying to wing him, you know, hit him in the arm or hit him in the leg, well, what happens if that bullet goes into an artery and they end up dying? You have to have the legal authority to use deadly force. So aiming for a hand, a leg, an arm, it's just not something we train for. And I'm sure some of these guys, Chief Bird or Chief Jogman, can expand upon that a little better than I can.
Chief Bird, you want to take it from there, buddy?
Sure. And Kirk hit all the major points there. I was the OIC officer in charge when I was with the state police for about 8 officer-involved shootings. I've had 2 here in DeKalb since I've been here in my 3 years, actually 2, my first year I arrived as chief here. So I have some experience in this, but like Kirk said, one of the things I think that is, you know, is for civilians is confusing is that, we're talking about stopping a threat. So, and we trained for this, and let's get, I just came off the range yesterday, and we're talking about a controlled environment. You're talking about officers practicing as stationary targets. We try to move officers to put them in the most practical situation of what they would see in real time, as far as using your firearm. So, we make them qualify, but like I said, we can move, but sometimes the target isn't moving and no one's shooting back at you. So, at the end of the day, if you're using deadly threat, that means the other party is actually doing the same to you. I mean, he's in the commission of a crime that he's using deadly force, or at least attempting to use deadly force against you or someone else. So you're talking about actually, in some cases, you're in a gun battle and you're expecting an officer with that heightened stress to shoot someone in the hand or the leg. And like Kirk said, what people don't understand, once the bullet is fired and it hits somebody, the trauma that is received is different for everyone. So what I mean by that is, I could get shot in the arm, and I think Kirk mentioned that if it hits the artery or something, or it's a possibility I could bleed out anyway and still lose my life because based on the trauma, everyone is different. Someone gets shot in the chest and live, another person gets shot in the thigh and die. So it just depends on the trauma and how the bullet affects that individual person. One of the other things, when you talk about shooting at small objects, like I said, and most of the times they probably would be moving. I mean, we have snipers who train all the time for this, and they're shooting from a distance, and they've been trained to do so. So if there was a situation where that would occur, where you were asked to be someone to shoot from a distance, it would be someone who is a sniper who's been trained, who has fired thousands and thousands and thousands of rounds practicing this. You're talking about an officer who works the street every day, who handles all types of calls of service. Yes, they qualify multiple times a year, but not as a sniper. I mean, you're asking them to do something that is a learned behavior to I mean, you're talking about the top of the top. You're talking about the best shooter in your department. Everyone can't do that. And it's just not practical to even think that they could and even think that they should. I mean, you're talking about shooting the biggest parts of the offender's body. So center mass is what we're taught all the time. We shoot center mass because you have all, your percentage of missing the person, of course, is smaller because I mean, you're shooting at the center of the body. Shooting at something as small as a hand. I mean, imagine this moving, like Kirk said, and then you're getting fired upon. Like I said, let's say if that's the case, and you're in a gunfight. I mean, you really seriously think that officers are going to practically try to shoot at somebody's hand? I mean, that's just not practical. And we've heard this over and over again. But I think truly, it's just not a practical operation. For a police officer who possibly could be losing their life, Dave. I think people have to understand the only reason why we're in a deadly threat situation is because they are posing a deadly threat against police officers, and doing that's just not practical.
Hey Lou, about 6 months ago, I went through the Northbrook PD Citizens Police Academy, whatever the term was, and it was a 10, 12-week course. We went through a bunch of different things, and one of the last classes was shooter profiles, right? Where they put you with a fake gun, they put the video screen up there, and they let all 12 or 15 of us, citizens go through different types of scenarios. My scenario was a school shooter. Okay, so I got through the cafeteria, walking down the hallway. There was a guy in a doorway. I said, "Northbrook Police, show me your hands. Northbrook Police, show me your hands." And I had my gun up, right? Fake gun. Guy turned around. I popped him center mass, and he was holding a cell phone. Okay, so can you? We heard Chief Brugman, and we heard Chief Byrd. What's that training like for your officers to tried to, and then explain it to the public when they're in a dangerous situation. I didn't know what the guy was holding in his hands. His hand was up, came around, bam, right? I didn't know if it was a gun. I didn't know if it was a can of soda. It just happened to be a cell phone, and I knocked him, right? And I popped him right center mass. It was a great shot. I got complimented, but I just killed a teacher, right? I didn't kill the bad guy. But you guys deal with that all, every single day.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that exercise for you to go through as a citizen or somebody that's not in law enforcement, I mean, it really brings it home. It really does kind of, that's the one way we can talk about this like we are right now. But really, barring going through a real situation, which we don't wish on anybody, that kind of training is really helpful and eye-opening. It's good for our officers because it does hone our skills, our reaction time, certainly our observation skills, you know. You can't go into this profession, or you shouldn't be in this profession, and think that every time there's a threat that it's going to end up in a shooting, or that the person's got is armed. Now they are quite often, but to your point, you know, people who are doing innocent things with a cell phone could make a movement that looks dangerous or threatening. So we have the obligation, as Chief Broman said, we, you know, this is a high responsibility to take lawfully somebody's life, and we don't take it lightly. So we do quite a bit of training on it. And so, to just address the question from the person that emailed it, it is a great question. I mean, people do ask, why do they? It's a big deal to take someone's life, to have somebody lose their life. You know, officers, that is not what we're looking to do. As we all know, you know, the first principle for the 10 shared principles is we value life above all else. And so I can understand why somebody would go, okay, if you value life, why don't you shoot them in the hand? Okay, good question, you know, and that's why we're here now talking about it. To Chief Byrd's point, it's impractical, it's impossible. You know, if you've got a moving target, a small target, and with all the things going on, we have a doctrine that we live by, you know, we protect life, but yeah, there's a hierarchy. And that hierarchy is the citizens' lives have come first. So if there's a citizen that is at risk, we will put our lives at risk to save that citizen. But in that hierarchy, you know, the police officer's life is next. And then the person doing the violence or committing the violence and trying to hurt somebody clearly is third. Now, we still, you know, we talked about it last episode. If a shooting occurs, goes and tries to help that person who just tried to take our life, you know, so we still value life in that way. So there's different ways that we, you know, look at that first principle. But the practicality and the ability and just how firearms work. And if you've never shot a firearm, there are people, they don't, you know, it isn't like a, you know, a water gun. There's a kick. There's just a whole bunch of things that are going on that it's very hard to be a great shot. I think we benefit from Hollywood sometimes, and sometimes it bites us. So, you know, you'll watch Hollywood or TV shows, and sometimes they show things that we can't do that look great. Like I've seen shows, CSI, they type in a name in a computer. Oh my God, you got everything, the life story from when they were born, you know, where they're at that very moment. You can go find them. They've got 30 minutes to make a show, so they kind of, you know, take some liberties. Likewise, I remember back in the day, and it still happens, but I saw, if everybody remembers the show The A-Team, it's been a while, The A-Team, great show, but you watch them shoot down a helicopter with a rifle, it's just not happening. I mean, it just doesn't happen. And you could probably think, I know the other chiefs on here, and AJ and you, David, you've probably seen things in the movies like, wow, no way a gun can do that, right? But then people get, you know, they see that and they think, well, it's got to be based on reality. A lot of it isn't. And so when you see TV shows where they're shooting people the gun out of their hands, they're like, well, why can't real police do that so people don't die? Listen, if we could, we would. There's no doubt about it. If I was in a shootout and I needed to end that threat and I could end it simply by hitting somebody in the hand and I could do it, I'd do it. But the chances of being successful, and then the last point is, you know, again, both chiefs mentioned stopping the threat. You could shoot somebody in the hand or in the shoulder, they're still able to act on whatever they were doing initially. You know, unfortunately, hit them in the leg, they still can shoot at you, you know, and then they can absolutely take the officer out of the equation and then continue on what they're doing, even with the wound to the leg. So it really is ultimately about stopping the threat. And then again, valuing life at the end and taking care of even the suspect when that person is down.
Dave,
Before I throw it to AJ. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Kirk.
You know how it is with Hollywood. I've seen a lot of Hollywood shows on home lending experts, and they're giving 1% for 30 years, you know.
I'm actually
Like those
calling
shows.
I'm calling a lady after this because she's quoting 3.875 And I thought I was in a time machine back to the spring of 2022. So I can't wait to find out how that's happening. But before I throw it to AJ, I will tell you this. When I was in that simulated situation in the Northbrook conference room, when I'm walking through a make-believe school, my hands were sweaty. My heart was going. Yeah. And I could feel the sweat coming down, and I was 100% safe, and I'm watching a TV with a fake gun. They put you in, and I'm watching the other 12 or 15 environments, and every single one of the citizens killed the person, some rightfully, and then some like me. Unfortunately, it was a bad shot in a bad situation. It was a good shot, but not in that situation, if you will. So, AJ, I'll throw it to you. What is the ILACP doing to educate the public about how that's not realistic, and all of these, defund the police people out there, and give up all the guns, and let's call in, mom with with the cookies and the milk to de-escalate a situation, which in a lot of cases when police officers in a deadly situation like that, what are you guys doing on the organization side to educate the public as to that it's not realistic?
Well, one of the things we're doing is this podcast, of course, to kind of help educate the public. That's our big initiative right now. But we also work on educating police departments. We have our use of force certification. The federal government used to have use of force certification up until, I think, just December. And once they ended their process, we decided, this is a great thing. We're going to continue to offer a use of force certification through the ILACP. We did some rebranding, and unsurprisingly, a lot of our departments who had already gone through the process for the federal use of force certification, they decided to keep going with it so that they have this certification. They've gone through the training. They have the policies in place to help with the use of force and de-escalation. So that's one of the things that we continue to do, and a lot of departments are continuing to get that certification. Another thing that we're doing is we have partnered with ILEAS for a less lethal alternatives grant, where we're offering this grant to agencies who qualify, and we will get them Axon Taser 7s or Axon Taser 10s to help them with their less lethal alternatives, so that they, when they do come up against those different situations, they do have tasers that they can use in less lethal alternatives.
Got it. Thank you for that.
Acronym check-in. So we talk about this all the time. Law enforcement uses acronyms quite a bit to simplify things, to make things short. AJ just mentioned ILEAS. Yeah. And so for those of you listening out there, ILEAS is ILEAS, Illinois Law Enforcement Alarm System. It's a statewide organization, really phenomenal, that provides mutual aid. And in short, has a preset kind of a standard where if a stricken municipality needs help, there's a hierarchy of officers from different departments that come. It's all prearranged. They do grants. They do a whole bunch of other things. So ILEAS is a wonderful statewide mutual aid organization. End of checkpoint.
All right.
Thanks, Lynn. If I could also, I want to talk about, we talk about less than lethal. AJ brought that up. So anytime we go to some of these situations, Dave, where there is a use of force needed or possibly needed. I mean, there's several levels of force that we could use. So we're always ready to deploy less than lethal. So, I mean, less than lethal meaning it could be a beanbag shot from a shotgun. It could be a taser, it could be a baton. I mean, it just depends. But we're always ready to deploy any one of those levels. It just depends on the level of force needed to stop the threat, and that's all fluid, right? If you see a subject come out with a hammer, you could probably stop him with a beanbag, maybe. I mean, so there's a good chance that less than lethal would probably work. But at some point, the less than lethal has to turn into, lethal force because it didn't work. You deployed it. It didn't work. Didn't stop the threat. He's still coming. And then at that point, you might be required to use deadly force because the less than lethal didn't work. But you always want to have those levels ready to be deployed in every situation if possible. And we practice that here at DeKalb. We'll have multiple officers. They'll make sure that when they arrive, that they acknowledge to everyone what use of force that they're going to deploy. So if I arrive, I'll say, hey, I have less than lethal. Chief Jogman say I'm lethal, you know, and maybe Chief Brueggemann will be de-escalation. So we have, so we all three of us are there. Chief Brueggemann is trying to de-escalate the situation, so hopefully that we never have to use any force. And that's his primary job. He's doing it. He's talking to this person through, hey, you know, please drop the knife. He's going through every step that he can to try to prevent any type of use of force. I am on standby. I'm ready with less than lethal to deploy it if necessary. And lastly, you got Chief Jogman, who's ready with lethal force if necessary. So we covered all the bases, and we try our best to avoid using deadly force on anyone. We talked about it over and over again that the, you know, preservation of life is primary, but we have to, like I said, like Chief Jogman hit it right down the head. You know, there, you know, we have a level of, you know, a hierarchy of who we protecting. I mean, yeah, we're there to protect the, you know, if there's a hostage, that hostage comes first, then the law enforcement officer, and then finally the offender. We're going to try to save him. We are, but he put him or her put themselves in this situation, and we have to act accordingly. So that's, so I just want people to know that we, it's not like everyone's at a scene and you know, and they, you know, and they have their weapons drawn. They're less than lethal, always ready to be deployed if necessary. So I just want to give everybody a better picture of how that would look if we were responding to a deadly force situation in most cases. Sometimes it might only be one officer, and of course, you know, the ability to is still there to deploy less than lethal, but you're talking about one officer, and he, and as you saw, Dave, doing the scenario based training, 1/100th of a second is all you get in some cases to make a life or death decision, as you saw, and you thought, I'm sure you saw it, you were like, okay, this is the right thing to do, and then you found out later, well, doggone, didn't even have a gun. It's 1/100th of a second, Dave. People need to understand that, how fast that is for an officer to make a life or death decision, and we have to do it every day. So
yeah, well, after I shot the guy, I said "mother trucker," you know, words that yeah, I'm just like, son of a gun. I'm like, yep. So now it would be nice if the public could go through those shooting exercises, so they could empathize with what you meant.
And I'm sure you would say it's eye-opening. Everybody that we have a citizens review board here at the Cal Police Department. We put them all through scenario-based training, just like you went through, Dave. And you wouldn't believe how they, I mean, the way they walked out of that that training. I mean, their eyes were just like, forget about it. All said, they like, Chief, we never expected that. I had one lady, she got beat down with a bat because she didn't take any action.
Yeah.
In the scenario, the guy just beat her down, you know, and she's like, I didn't know what to do. I'm like, I mean, you know, she's like, I probably should have shot him. I'm like, yeah, he beat you with a bat. Yeah. So
40 seconds.
But just real quick, when we were at our conference in April, one of our vendors, Wrap Technologies, they had a reality VR thing going on. And I went through it, and I've never fired a gun in my life. I've never done anything like that. But of course, that was part of the scenario that I was in. And a guy did come at me with a gun. And I tried to do the thing where I shot him in the arm or the leg, and he just kept on coming. Yep. So I saw that happening just with the virtual reality thing, until I did actually hit him center mass. He went down, and everything was great then. So thankfully, I should have done that first.
Yeah. And if you remember, I know everyone remembers the bank robbery in LA years ago. I mean, these guys they have bulletproof vests. They have ballistic all the way from their feet all the way to their neck. And they walked around with AK-47s firing at the police for hours. And it's because of they were prepared. So you don't know what that situation is going to be for each officer. You know, I mean, it could be a situation where the offenders are prepared. They are prepared for a battle. They have a skill set as well. They might, you know, I mean, they might be more prepared than the police officer. So, I mean, believe me, that went on for hours until SWAT was able to arrive, and they took a shot that needed to be taken. But I mean, they had ballistic vests and ballistic material all over their arms. They had gloves, everything. So sometimes you run into those situations, man. And that's, I mean, that's your worst case scenario, though. That's all hell broke loose. You're in trouble. So so there's a lot of, I just want everyone to understand a lot of factors involved in this one question. And we can talk about it for hours. So.
But it sounds like the movie Heat with Robert De Niro and Al Pacino.
It was basically like that. Yeah.
Well, we appreciate everybody for joining this week. We appreciate all the listeners and viewers for watching and listening. We appreciate everybody that emailed and sent us their email questions. And if you've got any questions, you could add more comments on the bottom of the comment section. You could like and forward. You could also send me an email behindthebadgeillinois@gmail.com. You could send AJ an email or any one of the Chiefs an email. We'll do another mailbag later on in the year. Again, this portion of this podcast sponsored by Team Hochberg. If you're looking to purchase a new home or refinance your existing home, give me a call, 855-56-DAVID. Go to 56David.com. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening. Thanks, Chief. We'll do it again next week.
Yep.